This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it's so good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, homeland security. We have a very exciting show today. We've got with us Michael B. Silovich. He's the Robert D. Black Professor of the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Northeastern University, and he wants to be sure that that I say that he's the Robert D. Black Professor. And that was very, very important to Michael when I interviewed him. Anyway, you're going to really enjoy the interview. He is an expert on localization awareness of explosives-related threats. He's a part of the Department of Homeland Security Center for Excellence. Big study in subsurface sensing and imaging systems. And graduated National Science Foundation Engineering Research Center. So, lots of great things. Northeastern University College of Engineering, distinguished professor and alumnus. You're going to really enjoy meeting Michael B. Silovich. And we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set of the second half of the program. And today we're going to ask the spirit of the fountain a very, very interesting geographical question, and let's see if we can stump him or stump you too. Okay, that's in the second half of the program, and of course at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. People tell us that that's their favorite part of the show is the listener comments and the voice of reason. And want to remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial free online and webcast anytime at promiseoftomorrow.biz. promiseoftomorrow.biz. And if you go there and you look at the right-hand side of your screen, you're going to see a link to the IEEE 2015 International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies. And as a matter of fact, Michael Silovich is going to be presenting at that conference with a lot of really exciting things. We're excited to hear about that. The Homeland Security Technologies Conference is the famous and historic international conference on homeland security technology gaps. The key technical gaps that will be closely examined, and the plenary speaker is Dr. Reginald Brothers. He's the Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology. So you're surely going to want to attend that conference if you're the least bit interested in homeland security. And as I say, you can find the link at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, on the right-hand side of your screen. Just click on the little icon there, and it'll take you right to the website. We're also going to talk today about some emerging technologies in new batteries, and also an alert about net neutrality. That's in the second half of the program. All right, we're honored to have with us today Michael B. Silovich. He's the Robert D. Black, I got to get this right, professor of the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Northeastern University. I got to get that right, too. And Professor Silovich is going to be speaking at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in the middle of next month. And so we are very honored to have him with us. And Professor Silovich, would you please tell us what are you going to be speaking on?
Well, what I'm going to be speaking on, it won't just be me. There'll be myself and three other presenters. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to give an overview of different kinds of methodologies to characterize and screen for or identify explosive-related threats or anomalies that are related to threats, for example, a homemade bomb being carried by a suicide bomber. Can we detect that before it becomes life-threatening? So the idea of being able to think about the spectrum of different types of technology at a fairly fundamental level is the intent of the tutorial.
All right, and it has an acronym, I understand, A-L-E-R-T, A-L-E-R-T for Awareness, Localization of Explosive-Related Threats. How long have you been in the study of ALERT?
Well, ALERT was funded in 2007 by the Department of Homeland Security after a national competition to determine the best group of people that could, in fact, advance the state of the art in the explosive detection technologies, for example. And, you know, as a result of that support by the Department of Homeland Security, we've been in the forefront of developing a number of innovative ideas and approaches and technologies that are going to be highlighted within the IEEE HST tutorial in April.
Okay, yes, I understand. That's the Department of Homeland Security Center of Excellence that you're operating in. And, it has to be quite a challenge, and I would not want you to give away any state secrets or anything, and I presume you won't either at the conference, but you're going to be able to explain some of the progress. And if you started in 2007, all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, we've got to be aware and of these localized explosive materials and threats and those sorts of things for suicide bombers and that sort of stuff. But my goodness, Professor, so how did you begin?
Well, it's an interesting question. My path towards the development of the ALERT Center of Excellence stemmed from the National Science Foundation in 2000. At that time, we won a major award from the National Science Foundation to create an engineering research center, which is equivalent in some ways to the Department of Homeland Security Center of Excellence. But the focus of that ERC was finding hidden things, whether the hidden thing is under the ground, inside the body, under the water, within a cell. So we were looking at questions relating to medical imaging, to underground pollution detection, to cellular activity in these microscopic structures, to coral reef health under the water. And so when the, God forbid, you know, the whole focus on the terrorist threat became, you know, evident after the Department of Homeland Security was formed, as a result of 9/11, Homeland Security announced an opportunity to fund a group to try and find explosive threats. So you have, you know, something buried in the ground. You have a tumor buried in the body. You have a bomb in a suitcase. They're very, very similar problems. And the whole focus of our center from NSF was creating common tools that could probe the underground, could probe the body, could probe the underwater with different sensors, of course, but the same processing tools could be applied to all those different domains. And so when the opportunity came to develop an explosive-related focus, then we had the foundational knowledge to be able to put forth an advanced program that was ultimately funded by DHS.
It's fascinating. So are we to then understand that you're currently able to do this detection of explosives and those related threats in various different areas, like underground or on the body or in a body or something of that nature? You're able to do it with a degree of reliability?
Well, you know, that's the goal. With explosive related technology, the more reliable you can detect the threat, the lower the false alarms or the false positives are, the better off you are, obviously. Same thing is true in medical imaging. You know, if you have a tumor and you're trying to diagnose whether that tumor is growing, whether it's benign, whether it's malignant, you have to be accurate. You can't, you cannot, you know, just sort of say, well, it's approximately, you know, a centimeter, maybe it's 2 centimeters. You have to be precise, because the doctors really need that diagnostic information in order to decide what therapy they're going to apply. So in the same sense, with Homeland Security problems, we have to be precise as we can be, so that the strategies to mitigate the threat can be effective.
Yeah, I understand. But, of course, with the tumors in the body, the only real way to determine anything is really with a biopsy, isn't it? I mean, you can't do it with an imaging, can you?
Well, you can. I mean, the first step is, in fact, imaging. You know, you have CAT scans, you have MRI, you have X-ray, you have ultrasound, for example. It turns out that all of those techniques could have extensions into detecting explosive-related threats as well as medical-related threats. So once you can, you know, look at an image and see an anomaly in the image that is not what you expected to see or wanted to see, then the next step is to either do a biopsy or open the suitcase, for example, mm-hmm. and take a look inside.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So the imaging occurs, I think, in the diagnosis stage, and then the next stage is, what do you do about the diagnosis?
Yeah, well, I've had MRIs before. They're very noisy and they're time-consuming, so I don't see them being very quick. Although we all have experience of going through the airport scanning machine that really basically undresses us and looks at everything that we happen to have attached to our body. Is that one of the items that has been pioneered through your study?
Yes, it is. I think that there's this whole idea of real-time, you know, what Homeland Security is now calling screening at the speed of life, L-I-F-E, speed of life, which means that as you go through security checkpoints, ideally you'd like to just walk through without any delays and have screening technologies be able to assess, you know, the potential presence of threats.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a goal of the future. This is what we identify as the checkpoint of the future, would be to enable that kind of on-the-move type of screening. But some of the challenges that we have dealt with within Alert have been, in fact, how do you speed up the screening process? How do you simplify it? How do you make it more, you know, reliable? And in terms of the difference between medical and security screening, CT screening for medical is still pretty quick. I mean, if you go in for a CT scan, it goes very quickly compared to an MRI, which takes a lot longer. The same thing is true for luggage. You know, the CT scanning goes through very fast, much faster than in the medical. But it could still be faster, obviously, because you want as little of a delay as you possibly can. So this whole idea of how you enhance the effectiveness in real time of these different technologies is one of the focuses of what we do in Alert.
Of course, we've had metal detection around for a good long time, and it's pretty, it's very reliable, as a matter of fact, I understand. But then there's the new plastic weapons that are being created through plastic printers. And, of course, someone said to me the other day, said, gee, they look for explosives. Why do they bother doing that? The modern explosives are all plastic explosives. So is that providing a challenge for you?
Well, you know, the non-traditional explosives or the homemade explosives are a challenge. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, the threats come in a variety of different forms. The simplest one, as you said, is metal detection. I mean, you find, you know, a simple metal object that doesn't look like what you want it to look like, then, you know, that's not trivial, but it's fairly easy to detect. if you've got more complicated situations like, you know, plastic explosives or other kinds of non-metallic but yet threatening objects, then your methodologies of detecting them have to be effective. And that's one of the big challenges of these screening techniques, is to say, can we discriminate benign objects from threatening objects, and in particular the chemical composition of these objects? And you know, that's a field of research that's constantly being refined. We're getting better and better, but we're by no means, you know, perfect at this point.
Well, plastic explosives, I understand really that the plastic is really what is the material that houses the explosive, but the explosive is still nitroglycerin, isn't it? I mean, the age-old explosive we used in dynamite all these years, and if that's not correct, please correct me, but is there then a pretty reliable way of detecting nitroglycerin, so you know that the plastic that is holding it, that might very well be explosive and not just some kid's toy?
Well, I wish it were as simple as that. I think that nitroglycerin is one type of explosive. There's the peroxide-based explosives. There's a whole range of new kinds of explosive mixtures that are, you know, are very effective threats. And, you know, it's really very, very simplistic to say we can identify, you know, one or two major, you know, major threats and not worry about the rest of them, because there's many, and that's a major challenge, Colonel, is trying to be as precise about what actually is the compound that could be considered as an explosive threat. The plastic itself, you know, that, as you say, is a housing, and what tends to do the damage is, you know, the explosive wave itself, and to some extent the shrapnel that might be available either on the within the threatening structure or you know, just around the periphery.
Well, I've been quite impressed with some of the sensors that that you all have developed. I just flew to St. Martin's Island with some friends recently, and one of our friends was detained by TSA and because of a substance that showed up on her hands. And when we scratched our heads and tried to figure out what all the fuss was about, we realized that they had fired a weapon at some time or other, had put it away dirty without cleaning it. Not necessarily dirty, but without cleaning it. And she had moved the weapon that morning to some safe place in her home before she took off for the airport. I only presume that she probably had washed her hands a couple of times since then, but somehow or other it was detected at by the TSA, and they had some questions for her. So that's pretty sensitive stuff.
Well, you know, that's the area that we call trace detection. And going back to the tutorial itself, you know, one of the areas that we're going to be discussing is how do you characterize explosives, which was your previous question. You know, what are the compositions of different type of explosives, and what kind of instrumentation can detect very minute signatures, if you will, of these explosives on, you know, someone's hand or on the clothing. This is quite different from a CT scan that happens when you send your suitcase, you know, through the scanner at the airport. That creates a three-dimensional image of what's called bulk explosives, which is, you know, explosives that are, you know, massive enough that they can actually cause damage. Mm-hmm. So the two are used in a complementary way. You know, if you find that someone has trace evidence on their hands or on their clothing, that could be a signal to look deeper into what's in the person's carry-on bags, maybe even check bags to see whether there's anomalies there that correlate. So in the tutorial, we'll talk about just that. We'll talk about the array of instruments to detect trace, and Professor James Smith from the University of Rhode Island, chemistry professor there, will be giving the presentation of that material. That'll be followed by another area of anomaly or threat detection, which is the use of video, because a lot of times you can tell a lot of information from the way a person is walking, from, you know, anomalous behavior. Maybe they drop a briefcase and walk away from it, that kind of thing. So video turns out to be a very powerful tool in giving you situational awareness of crowds in particular. And so Professor Octavia Camps from Northeastern University will be talking about video analytics and how you can use video to really identify anomalous behavior that could be correlated to the existence of threats. Then finally, Dr. Carl Crawford, who is the president of a small company called, it's CSUP2 is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's an acronym that's a play on words under Carl Crawford. But Dr. Crawford will talk about the fundamentals of CT scanning, bulk scanning, and also personnel scanning using millimeter wave, X-ray backscatter equipment, that kind of thing. So, you know, the structure of the tutorial will be to give a spectrum of things, and I will give an overview of many of those different aspects of explosive-related threat detection, and I'll also talk about how we create collaborative opportunities for stakeholders to work with our Center of Excellence in, you know, helping to safeguard our nation.
So with the video, that's going to demand interpretation. In other words, you take a video of somebody, and it may not mean anything to me, but after I've been through the tutorial, I may then know what to look for when I see somebody walking strangely or leaning a certain way or doing a certain thing because of the choreography of that particular individual. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's more, I think, in the future, Colonel. What we're doing first right now is we're looking at low-hanging fruit, okay?
All right.
So you want to ask, are there overt events that you can detect with video cameras that will allow you to stop, potential security breaches? So one example is, and we're all familiar with this, when we leave the terminal of the airport, we go through a secure area, and we pass an exit door, and we go into an unsecured area, mm-hmm. where you go down and pick up your luggage and get the taxis or whatever it is.
Okay.
Well, on occasion, there will be people that go the other way. They go from the unsecure area into the secure area, and they're able to do that without being detected or deterred. Well, if that happens, that creates a major, you can detect it, but you may be too late in stopping it, if you see what I'm saying. The person has already gone through and mm-hmm. is in the secure terminal. You know that someone has breached the exit lane. You have to stop all activity until you can verify that the person that went the wrong way is harmless. And most of the time, those people are harmless.
Well, I've been given the cue. We have to take a break, but we'll be back to expand more on that thought right after this. Okay. As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
William Somerset, Mom. We're not the same person this year as last. Nor are those we love. It's a happy choice if we, changing, continue to love a changed person.